6. Vanex Vankele System. The tall man, wrapped in a gray hooded cloak, entered the shop. His face was shadowed by the hood. Under the cloak his garments were plain, dark trousers and tunic of the sort that any laborer might wear. Behind him rolled a blue and white R2-class astromech. The shop owner, an aged human man with a fringe of white hair and roomy blue eyes, sighed. He moved his hand inconspicuously under the counter to grip the hilt of the blaster pistol holstered there. He hated clients who preferred to remain anonymous. So often they were on business that invited government scrutiny, and those were the best cases. The worst were when they were here to rob rather than employ. But this one, at least, had brought a droid, which suggested his business was actually in the shop owner's line. "You repaired droids?" the cloaked man asked. His accent was foreign, Corellian, perhaps. "We do," the shop owner said. "We have cleverly concealed that information on the sign outside, the blinking apparatus that reads Ningle's Droid Repair." Apparently oblivious to irony, the visitor nodded. "I want this one fixed." "Certainly. What's the nature of his malfunction?" The cloaked man sighed. "He has a partner, a protocol droid, and they argue." The protocol droid apparently hacked into his speech translators, and now all he does is insult. "We want that programming removed. We also want his recording memory wiped. Not his other programming, just the recording memory." "Easily done. You can wipe it in such a way that what's on it can't ever be retrieved, not by anyone, no matter how good." "Also easily done. I just have to overwrite every portion of his recording memory with something else, several times, to make sure the most sensitive retrieval equipment can't dig underneath the new material." The cloaked man breathed a sigh of relief. "Good." The shop owner tapped the counter. "Plug in here, please." The astromech obligingly rolled forward. He extended his data jack arm and plugged in. A moment later, a text screen lit up on the shop owner's countertop. "What's your name, little fellow?" the shop owner asked. The words, "That's none of your business," appeared on the screen. "In any case, your facial feature set suggests that you do not have the intelligence to retain my name for more than a nanosecond. It is evident that you have been taught to repeat sounds you have heard, and that you understand neither the words you hear nor the ones that emerge from your mouth."
"I see what you mean," the shop owner said. "Well, this is a simple task. We should be through later this afternoon."
"Good," the cloaked man said. He turned to leave.
"Wait a moment. How do I notify you when we're done?"
"I'll just return."
"And we haven't discussed my fee yet."
"That's right. I don't have any local money."
"I'm afraid New Republic credits are no good here."
"I have an extra power cell for the R2, fully charged."
"If you have two, that would suffice."
"For a simple task you should be through with later this afternoon?" The shop owner smiled.
"Is it a new power cell?"
"Brand new.
I bought it on Coruscant about a month before it fell."
The man returned to the counter and produced a standard astromech power cell from beneath his cloak. Its reflective surfaces gleamed in the shop owner's counter light. The shop owner picked it up, hefted it, looked at its charge indicator.
"Done," he said. "I'll see you this afternoon."
"Thank you." 2 minutes after the cloaked man left, a young woman entered. She was no customer, the shop owner knew. Despite her fair hair, she seemed somehow somber, and she had the bearing of a military officer. She displayed an identichip bearing the seal of Vanex Intelligence and put it in the countertop reader for a moment. The display took only a moment to read, "Confirmed."
"What did that man want?"
she asked. The shop owner sighed. Sometimes it was a curse, always knowing when a customer was going to cause trouble. Senator Adith Geddon kept the smile fixed to her face. Sometimes that
extra effort kept her voice similarly pleasant, similarly light. "You can't make the rally at all?" Leia Organa Solo's voice sounded from her desktop comlink, just as light, just as artificial. "Not today's. I'm sorry, Adith. Han is ill, and I just feel I need to stay with him. But send me the schedule for tomorrow's events, and I should be able to make those."
"I'll do that. Please give him my best wishes."
"Of course." Adith sat and fumed. Ill, indeed. Han Solo hadn't been too ill to sneak out of the presider's residence, eluding two layers of her security before being detected and followed by the third. Any smart operative could have penetrated one or two layers from the inside out, as he did, but Solo had managed it with an R2 astromech in tow, a pretty good trick. Not that, ultimately, it had done any good. She hit the desktop button again, and once more the conversation, copied from the R2 unit's recording memory before it had been wiped, replayed itself. First was Leia's voice, a whisper. "So what's the total?" Han's voice was similarly hushed. "He's promising two squadrons of starfighters and a light carrier to serve as their base ship."
"I don't know, Han. That's selling oneself pretty cheaply.
We need all the military resources we can get, and he wouldn't commit to any more than that. So I said yes. And the timetable means taking delivery soon. We're going to have to leave."
Leia sighed. "This is going to be a big blow to Adith."
"I know, but survival is more important than friendship."
Adith switched it off. Anger made her feel tight from head to foot. It wasn't Leia turning against her that angered her. That was just politics. It was the fact that it might have worked. If she hadn't had enough layers of security for one of them to keep track of Han's movements, this deal between the Solos and the Admiral might have come to pass, and she'd have missed her chance, her opportunity to come up with a more formidable counter-bribe. They walked alone on the lengthy balcony at the rear of the presider's residence. Adith had arranged for it to be cleared of all visitors, of all government employees, for this meeting. Now Leia walked along beside her, with Han, wrapped up in his hooded cloak and anonymous as any bodyguard or servant, a step behind them. Truth be told, Adith preferred it that way. There should never be any question that Han Solo, regardless of his comparative fame, ranked lower than she did.
"I have come to make you an offer," Adith said. "Something to help motivate your participation in my campaign."
Leia hesitated.
"About that, Adith, I won't be able to help. Circumstances have changed. Han and I have to return to Borlaus immediately. We'll be leaving tonight."
"Bear with me. I think what I have to offer will change your mind. I think you'll want to stay."
Well, let's hear it."
"Six squadrons of improved A-9 vigilance interceptors and a Nebulon B frigate refitted to carry them all. It's more of a light carrier than it is a frigate. Vessels like it form the backbone of our new fleet."
"Impressive.
And you'd give me all this just to keep me here campaigning for you?"
"Yes, I think that highly of your influence."
"But, Adith, you aren't in possession of those vehicles. Admiral Wurl is."
"Until I win the election, that is, at which time I take control of the military and can simply detach those units from the Navy. We won't need them anyway. We'll be pursuing non-violence pacts with the Yuuzhan Vong."
Leia sighed. "Listen, Adith, you might lose this election even with my participation. Or there might be another runoff. Or some enemy of your politics might arrange for you to be killed. There are 1,000 different things that could pop up to keep you from providing us with those resources.
I have to refuse."
"What if I obtained them for you now?"
"How?"
Adith slipped a data card from her sleeve and held it up. It glinted in the moonlight.
"This card holds access and authorization codes, plus a temporary military rank for the bearer. It will allow you to enter Vanstar Military Base, catch a shuttle to any of our new frigates, and assume command of it, for whatever purpose you want. Send it straight to Borlaus."
"Adith, you're talking about taking control of military resources you don't have legal control over."
"But I will. a little alteration of documentation, and the dates for the transfer of ownership and control are moved up to one day after I assumed the presider's office.
That's just wrong, Addith. I can't do that. I don't think I can support you in this campaign at all.
Addith blinked at her.
Leah, you surprise me. I doubt your husband is so dainty.
She turned back to the cloaked figure.
What do you say, Han?
Han has nothing to say about this.
Perhaps you should let him speak for himself.
I would if he were here.
What?
Addith felt a jolt of coldness spread through her. She looked again at the tall, cloaked figure.
Who's this, then? Your bodyguard?
Addith, I can't exactly introduce you to Fossil Gem. I understand you already know her. That coldness reached to every one of Addith's fingers and toes as the cloaked figure threw back the cloak hood. The gesture revealed the face of a tall, lean woman, dark-haired, dark-eyed. On her forehead was a device shaped like a crown, but instead of featuring a central gem, it carried a central lens. It was a head-mounted holocam, favored by some field recorders. Addith had known her face for years. It belonged to one of the preeminent investigative holojournalists on the world of Annex, and she stared at Addith without mercy.
"Hello, Senator."
Leah said, "Fossil, perhaps you could give us a few moments alone."
"Of course."
The broadcaster gave Addith a perfunctory nod, then turned away. Addith opened her mouth wide and drew in a deep breath of air, but Leah placed a finger over Addith's lips.
"Don't do it, Addith. Don't call for your guards. Fossil has already broadcast that entire recording to an editing station. You'd inconvenience her, you'd inconvenience me, but you wouldn't prevent your arrest."
Addith sighed out nearly the entire lungful.
"Leah, why did you do this?
Don't play innocent with me. It's because I'm certain that your way of dealing with the Yuuzhan Vong will result in more deaths, more tragedy than my way. So I've stopped you. You have a ruthless streak I'd never appreciated in you."
"It came out when circumstances started killing my children."
"So what options do you leave me with?"
"You have two options. You can stay on Vanix, and within the next 3 hours Fossil will broadcast her report. Dealing with subsequent arrest and mobs is up to you. Or you can flee the residence and find yourself passage off-world by dawn, in which case Fossil will give you a full day to get to freedom, then broadcast her report. Either way, she broadcasts. I couldn't persuade her otherwise."
Leah plucked the data card from Addith's fingers.
"I'll get this back to the Admiral."
Addith felt her smile grow bitter. "So you and your husband sold your services to the Admiral for, what was it, 2 squadrons and a light carrier?"
A frown creased Leia's brow.
"No, we were going to help her from the moment we arrived. The only thing she promised us was some antiquated Sea Navy equipment, decommissioned vessels."
"Then what?"
"Oh, the squadrons were what General Antilles promised Han if he'd come back now and accept a military commission. Han had a holocom conversation with Wedge while he was running errands this afternoon. The whole conversation is recorded. I can let you watch it."
Addith nodded glumly.
"I see.
But I now suspect that Han will decline the commission. He likes being a civilian, a scoundrel."
"Of course. Quite an extensive setup."
Wearily, Addith turned away.
"I'll be leaving. Perhaps the former presider would like some additional company. There's a guest at the front gates of the residence, a member of Fossil's staff. She'll be accompanying you until you board your ship off-world, helping you keep track of details."
"I appreciate your thoroughness, Leia. You think of everything."
Left alone on the porch, Leia watched Addith walk away and took stock of her feelings. She almost felt bad for Addith. Watching a person's whole store of hopes and dreams go up in flames wasn't pleasant. But Addith was no fool. She could analyze the Yuuzhan Vong's relationship with allied worlds as well as anyone else, Ada simply could not give up the reins of power and would hold them in clenched hands, whatever the cost. Since a military opposition to the Yuuzhan Vong meant handing too much power to others, she was willing to steer this world into eventual oblivion just so long as she was in control until that final moment. Whether it was by denying the truth even to herself, or by cold-bloodedly selling the population of an entire world into slavery and death, Adith had made the wrong choice, and her influence had to be eliminated. Leia decided that she felt neither sadness nor joy, just satisfaction with the job well done. She turned to rejoin her husband, who would understand. Coruscant. It took only a few hours for Luke and his companions to search the remainder of the scientific station, for Kel and Elisar to locate the other end of the massive being's escape path and weld a heavy metal sheet across it, for Bindi to get some of the computers operating and extract information from them. Bindi gathered them in an open area on the top level, an area, Kel pointed out, that he had laboriously cleaned and emptied of machinery parts until it was fit for occupation, to give them her evaluation. It was now set up with chairs, made of some antiquated plastic material, and curved in artistic patterns that Luke thought he'd once seen in a museum display, combining comfort with dated pretension, and one functional medical droid that Bindi had assembled from parts of several damaged ones. The repairs had not been completely successful. The droid walked with a wobble caused by the fact that its right lower leg section was identical to its left, throwing it a bit off balance. "What we have here," Bindi said, "is two different scientific stations put together. Both of them operations of Imperial Intelligence, the first of them dating from about 50 years ago, though this complex has been here for centuries. And this is CPD-113, who has been here since the commencement of this station's third stage of operation. 113? "Greetings," the droid said. Its voice was thin, cultured, with a distinct Coruscant accent. "You are all intruders. Prepare to die." It turned to look across all its visitors. "This is the part where the military droids jump out of their niches and kill us all," Bindi said. She reached over and fiddled with the restraining bolt plugged into the droid's chest. 113, our continued presence here is proof that we are authorized personnel." "That is correct," the droid said. "I am CPD-113, medical droid, optimized for suspended life process maintenance. You are all intruders here. Prepare to die." "What is this complex?" Mara asked. CPD-113 stood more upright, and his voice became cheerier. "Welcome to the Passarian Memorial Atmospheric Reclamation Complex Project, Substation 1, formerly the Coruscant Atmospheric Reclamation—" "Quiet," Bindi interrupted. "I'll synopsize." "If you must." Bindi glared at 113, and he slumped. "The complex," she continued, "all its various substations put together, is a sort of worldwide air scrubber. Quite a while back, once Coruscant's leaders built over the last forested regions, the planet lacked sufficient natural resources to manage the atmospheric pollutants produced by the world's industrialized species. The government had that covered, though, in building a series of very efficient facilities that converted carbon dioxide into oxygen, removed waste gases, that sort of thing. That red goo, several stories up, doesn't just act as a devourer tank. It's a variant of the devourer organism, especially engineered for high-efficiency conversion of carbon dioxide to oxygen. It functions with the same efficiency as several thousand square kilometers of tract forest. And there are hundreds of similar substations all over Coruscant. Well, there were. Some may be damaged or destroyed now, but most were built at bedrock level. Lots of them could have survived so far." "Wait, wait," Luke frowned. "They have to have some sort of active air-pumping mechanism." "That's correct. You are all intruders. Prepare to die." Grimacing, Bindi did something to the droid's restraining bolt. CPD-113 jerked as if electrocuted each time. "Each station," Bindi continued, is attached to an elaborate network of intake and output ducts, in with the bad air, out with the good. And it's those ducts that are most likely to have failed planet-wide with the destruction Coruscant is experiencing. But the thing is, each one of those stations could serve as a resistance center if I can get to it and get into it.
Face gave her a disbelieving look. Are they all secret like this one?
Every one.
Why?
That was the second stage of the operation.
Bindi stared forbiddingly at 113. Think you can give them some history without death threats?
I have made no threats, only announcements of impending doom.
CPD 113 straightened.
The second state of this complex, according to the maintenance droids that preceded me here, began with the gradual elimination, through retirement and transfer, of all living personnel who operated this station. They were replaced by droids. Then, once the station had been operated entirely by droids for several years, its reclamation organism's tank was disguised as a devourer tank, and the operation center was hidden away, accessible only by a secure turbolift.
By whom and for what purpose? Face asked.
By order of the Imperial government, and for the purpose of being able to exert control over this planetary environment in times of crisis.
Luke raised an eyebrow over that.
Exert control? You mean, in times of revolution, he'd cut off the air?
That is correct. Should the Emperor need to regain control, or merely cause billions to die, he could threaten to shut off the complex and strangle Coruscant in its own wastes.
Merely cause billions to die.
Luke shook his head over that turn of phrase.
This doesn't conflict with your medical programming?
Oh, no, sir. Implementation of such an operation would be at the Emperor's sole discretion and by his own hand.
Face managed a mirthless smile.
No matter what, any time I learn something more about Emperor Palpatine, I wish I hadn't.
So what was the third stage? Luke asked.
Installation of the systems and organisms needed to maintain the subject, said CPD 113. It was an operation that had no significant relation to our primary purpose, but this location, the substation closest to the Imperial government centers, was convenient.
Luke tried to wave the excess verbiage away.
What was the subject?
A human male. He and a human female came to occupy this complex 13 years ago. Later, another male joined them for a time. They had proper authorization and controlled droids that could activate the turbolift control in the tank above. Months after their arrival, the second male left, and the first male was operated on and installed in the suspended animation unit.
Human males don't grow to be 3 meters tall.
They do if subjected to specific growth hormones and cybernetic stimulation for years, starting in childhood or adolescence.
So who is this human male?
Unknown, sir. His identity was never provided to us, nor the nature of its armor modifications.
Before Luke could ask, the droid hurried on.
It had hypoallergenic armor plates installed in its torso, head, elbows, and knees. The portions of its brain pertaining to human memory were largely replaced by computer apparatus. We of the maintenance staff concluded that it was to be a war machine of some sort, but beyond that, we knew nothing.
Do you have any images of this, either from before or when it recently emerged?
113 shook its head.
No, sir. We were forbidden by our protocols from recording the subject in any way, nor do I know what you mean by emerged.
Curious, Luke glanced at Bindi. She said,
it appears that their programming on this point was pretty comprehensive. When the subject came out of his suspended animation tank, their programming kicked in and they couldn't even detect him any longer. He cut them to pieces without them knowing what was happening.
Wonderful. Luke said.
So our so-called Lord Nyax is a 3-meter human male, possibly a Jedi, certainly a Force user. wandering around in a world where it probably doesn't understand anything.
That seems to be about the size of it, Bindi said. Isn't the truth liberating?